Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
Final Thursday of June. Paul Iyander, Lindsey Brown with you here.
Hello.
Thanks for making us a part of your afternoon. It's a full 2 hours of getting you ready for the NHL Draft Lottery. A full break. I'm kidding.
Oh, my God. I was like, I did not prepare for this, this level of depth into the NHL Draft, but we're here for it.
I guess.
Yeah. That's what we must do.
That would throw off so many folks.
Yes, it would indeed.
Yeah, so in-depth coverage of the Detroit Red Wings, the once proud Red Wings.
They were proud.
Yeah, back in the day.
They've seen better days.
They have.
Yeah.
Yes, they have.
Yeah, they're almost a pretty much a lock to get that number one overall pick, and they need all the help they can get.
Truthfully, the NHL draft lottery is tomorrow. The NFL's on my mind because it leads off our checkdown, which starts right now.
It's your daily checkdown, powered by Radio.com Sports. Number one.
Okay, so as I will slowly drink myself into a stupor after learning that Chuck E. Cheese has filed for bankruptcy today.
It's too soon.
I know.
Soon.
They're stealing all the stuff from youth, the fun stuff.
There is nothing I looked forward to more as a child than going to arcades, which are child casinos, but nonetheless, the prizes.
Truth.
You just... There's a competition piece. You're always competing with your friends or with your family members that came to the birthday party with you. If you had the grand prize, that was, you know, that's a huge victory.
That's right. There's something to be said about spending $25 to trade it in for something that's worth $5.
Yes. So the teddy bear was worth it, okay, Paul?
It probably was.
It was worth it.
All right. So the first time ever, the NFL is admitting that it can't go on with its schedule as planned, as they have called off the Hall of Fame game between the Cowboys and the Steelers. It was set to be played August the 6th in Canton, Ohio. And now there is talk about the NFL reducing the preseason schedule in order just to kind of keep everybody healthy and keep that calendar and that timeline intact.
Yeah, this is kind of the first sign of business is not as usual other than the draft, but you know, it makes complete sense. You want to minimize travel as much as you possibly can. And if that means we got to minimize the number of preseason games as well to make sure we have a full slate of regular seasons, I think that's a sacrifice all of us would be willing to make.
Unfortunately, what it means is we're going to have to relive the whole fake, hey, we're here on Fox and we're telling Jimmy Johnson that he just made the Hall of Fame video, because they're going to carry over everybody who was supposed to be inducted this year into next year's Hall of Fame. So a much even longer induction ceremony will take place. But the two teams that were supposed to play this year most likely will be the teams that play in the Hall of Fame game next year, because of the fact that Bill Cowher and Troy Polamalu were also inductees. Cowboys and Steelers kind of make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And now Mark, well, it won't be the second consecutive year, but second year out of three where they'll kind of have a supersized class going into that Hall of Fame, because didn't they have one for the centennial celebration last season?
Yes, they did.
Yes, that's correct.
So Hall of Fame game is off. That was supposed to be the first taste of professional football on August 6th. And now some scuttle about reducing the NFL season. We'll see what happens with that one. But yes, business not as usual for the first time in the NFL.
Number two.
Okay, so the picture speaks 1,000 words, right? That's what you say? Picture speak 1,000 words?
Sounds correct.
Yeah, it was. It was a noose at Talladega Super Speedway.
100% a noose.
Clearly, the photo from NASCAR security that was released today kind of putting away any sort of notion that this was something that you would find in your garage.
Yeah, there are a lot of people saying hoax.
In anybody's garages. Mm-hmm. Just putting it out there right now, NASCAR is saying, in hindsight, yeah, we could have toned down our original statement. There's no doubt about it. But we put this out there because people wanted to figure out exactly what it was out there.
Exactly.
And for it to be classified as a news, you will look at it and you can see it. And if you haven't seen it, you'll see it, and it is. I mean, it's what you would see in the Wild Wild West in a Western movie is before
right.
they're getting ready to lead the bad guy to the hangman.
Yeah, and considering the climate that we're in, while it may be now, it seems kind of like a little bit of an overreaction, as the commissioner said, with the language they use, but completely understandable that if that's what it looked like and that's what it is, and it is a noose, it's completely understandable why they went to the lengths that they did for the investigation and all that.
And because of the investigation, NASCAR is going to do a few more things. They're going to add even more cameras in NASCAR garages. They're also going to have everyone go through sensitivity and unconscious bias training, and they're going to sweep all the garage areas.
Right.
So, security, safety, and social. Lots of things being wrapped up into this, but don't call it what it isn't. It is.
Yep.
It's a noose.
Listen, learn, action. Boom.
All right. Moving on.
Number three.
So this has got to be one of the toughest putts you'll see when it comes to college football. We all want sports to be played, and some people are making some sacrifices. There's no doubt about it. Yes, you're wearing masks. Sorry. It's not quite the sacrifice that Penn State coach James Franklin is going to make. So here's what happened. When the whole COVID thing went down back in March,
mm-hmm.
he and his family decided to go to Colorado. They literally went to the mountains and hid in the mountains
yeah.
for a month.
Because Pennsylvania was kind of it seemed like a hot spot at first.
It absolutely was a hot spot. Having family that lived there, it was like literally go
right.
outside at your own risk. You would go to the store and you might be the only person there.
Right.
It was that intense. Franklin took his family to Colorado. They've all gone back home, but now they had a very tough conversation. You think you've had some hard conversations in your family when it comes to your family about what's happening these days with coronavirus, with racial injustice, with having to homeschool your kids.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to separate. Franklin is going to separate from his entire family. They're going to go live at the family has a Florida home. They're
mm-hmm.
going to Florida, which, again, Florida.
Yeah.
Okay. They're going to go stay in Florida. He is going to sequester himself by himself in Pennsylvania so he doesn't get her sick because she has sickle cell disease.
Which makes her immunocompromised and very much at risk for infection and the bad side.
So, the mask thing? Seriously, this guy
yeah.
is going to separate from his family.
Yes. Yes. And that's why if the human decency argument doesn't do it for you, if you like sports, if you want them to go off in any sort of iteration, wear your damn masks. So I ended the show with it every single day.
That and the really screechy bye thing.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Yeah, that thing. But that doesn't come until 4:55.
That's true.
They're going to lock down the entire season. He's going to keep himself away for the entire season.
That's heartbreaking.
That's tough.
Because she's 12 and he has other kids and is away from his entire family. That's huge.
They stayed in Colorado for a month, and then they stayed, when they got back to Pennsylvania, then they stayed inside for another month.
Yeah, they're on complete lockdown. Complete.
Yeah, so, and then they're going to Florida, which
Hey.
Hey, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, you know, dude's separating from his family.
For the entire season.
So Penn State can play college football.
Yep.
That's a sacrifice.
Correct.
All right, move it on.
Number four.
I wonder where it is. So, there are now concerns from many players across many leagues now about returning to play. Today is the opt-out day for the WNBA. And while you check out social media, and a lot of jokesters on the Las Vegas Aces, by the way, if you look...
Lots of personality.
They're all
sure.
just like, yuck, yuck, yuck.
I mean, love it.
It is, some of it's just incredibly dry humor. Other of it's just like, I told you so, snap your fingers humor.
Yep.
Other it's kind of like, talk to the hand humor. Others it's just, they're self-depreciating. Totally get it. But if you reach beyond that, there are some concerns, and it might not be the Aces, but there are concerns about from the WNBA players that the bubble that they're playing in isn't going to be as airtight as they think it's going to be. And I wonder if that's because of the PGA golf thing.
Right.
Because of how leaky the bubble can get.
Right. Or just the gut check of realizing, this isn't as airtight as we thought it would be. And it's in Florida, if I'm not mistaken, restart.
They're an IMG, which, again, you can only do so much. You're going to have to clean it. Inherent risk. We've talked about that with Sam and Ash before. We've talked about it in this program before, on the record for sure. I'm not buying the idea that some players felt that they needed to rush to get to Florida. I mean, this has been in the works for a couple of weeks now, leading up to now.
Right.
And I get that you have to work out certain things if you've got kids and family and you got to figure some of those things out.
Sure.
But ultimately, it's like, is this the life that you're going to live? Is this the profession that you chose? And you can opt out. They're letting everybody opt out.
Last day to do it for them.
Right. But today's the day.
Yep.
WNBA is echoing some of the players from Major League Baseball.
Yep.
Certainly some of the, honestly, I'll say misguided tennis players. I'm like, come on now.
Yep.
Serena Williams says she's going to play. You should play.
Mm-hmm.
She's tough.
Yeah.
Novak Djokovic, give me a break.
Yeah.
And that one dude from Australia.
Don't even get me started.
But there is some concern about the play more than anything else. Now, in WNBA, it's different. It's not about the money. It's just about health and trying to figure out, you know, what to do. Some of them are worried about living arrangements. And again, if they feel rushed, I kind of get that.
Right.
But
there's a lot of compromises to make if you're a player in one of these leagues. There's a lot of things that you're taking and taking more risk. And it's going to just be down to everybody's personal responsibility and personal choice.
So we'll see how many people actually opt out of the WNBA season, which they're going to play inside the bubble for 22 games. I mean, yeah, it's a long time. I get it. I mean,
yeah.
If I had to live in the Biodome too, I'm not sure I could do it. I've lived away from my family before for stretches because of work. And
right. But yeah, under these circumstances,
right, it's
no.
True. No, it's totally different. Absolutely. But, you live the hermit life. And
yep.
This is the price that we have to pay for sports. The price that athletes and coaches and trainers have to play if we want to have sports this year.
Yeah. And I believe the opt-out date, at least the last date you can do on the NBA side, is the 1st of July, correct? So you're less than a week away from that date, too.
Yeah, and more and more of them are testing positive. More and more of them are saying, yeah, we're going to kind of do other things or think about it hard. So
Avery Bradley is not going to be joining the Lakers squad in Orlando, so I think we're going to see a few more names attached saying, I'm not going, and that's okay.
If 90% of the NBA shows up for camp, you're going to watch.
Yeah.
And they're going to play.
Yes. Exactly. It's gonna get done, but that's what I mean. Everybody's dealing with different circumstances, and I don't blame anyone by saying, yeah, I'm not feeling this bit for whatever reason, because there's just so much going on, so much to consider, and, this is a big-time decision. Big time.
It is. All right.
Number 5.
Okay, so lots of news today when it comes to bringing bodies back to the stands. One of the most significant ones this afternoon is that the Kentucky Derby, which was rescheduled to basically Labor Day weekend because of the pandemic, is going to have a crowd in place at Churchill Downs.
Oh!
Wow, what was that?
Somebody already at the starting line.
Apparently.
Brown, is that you?
Big Brown.
Didn't he win the Triple Crown?
Yeah, I think so.
Just dropping sports knowledge today, Paul. It's what we're doing.
I suppose so. So they're going to have spectators in place. They're going to announce tickets and seating. So this might be one of those kind of marquee events that you're going to want to go to if you've got the means to do so.
Well, yeah.
Because they're going to cut down the crowd. And normally, Churchill Downs, and I've had friends that have attended the Kentucky Derby. I've not been lucky enough to attend a derby, but I've had friends who have dressed up and put on the fedoras and the suits and things like that and drinking themselves into a stupor while winning money. I had a friend of mine won like $12,000 at the Derby a couple of years ago.
Tom Brady literally brings every single friend that he's ever had every year to
this
thing.
But this is a grand packed event. It's a social event more than it is an actual sporting event, more than anything else. But they're going to have spectators at the Kentucky Derby. And also this afternoon, which is not on our list here, also this afternoon, the Michigan governor, Whitmer there says, yep, pro sports can play again. No crowds there.
Right.
But they're going to allow professional sports to play, which paves the way a little bit now for Major League Baseball to actually move forward in Michigan and allows for other sports to be had there, whatever it happens to be.
Right. And I don't really have a problem with them having this plan in place because this date is still so far out, September 4th and 5th, as you said, Labor Day weekend. So a lot can change before then, but we're very aware of our need and our want to be in the stands, but that might not be a realistic thing once it rolls around. Just depends on what happens.
Sure.
Wear your mask.
They're going to figure it out. And also in New Hampshire today, the NASCAR race that's going to be run there, they announced they're going to allow 35% of capacity.
In Loudon?
It's the first race in August for NASCAR.
Oh, God. Do I have some memories at that track? Fundraising events. NASCAR. It's a great time. It's a great time.
So things are slowly opening up. Get used to the social distancing. You know, we tell you in our little promo that you hear throughout the day to wash your hands and social distance and things like that. And, you know, don't show up if you're sick. But I know you know what's going to happen. Someone's going to come down with some just nasty cold or something like that before these things. Oh, I got to go. I totally got to go. You know what? It's okay. You don't have to be that brave. And I get it. You haven't been to a thing in a couple of months. Don't get everybody else sick, please. It's like going to the family barbecue or the neighborhood barbecue and you bring potato salad and you're just like, all right, here it is. And then you sneeze and you're like, dude, I ain't touching that noise.
Right. And it's not going to be a full-blown experience either. We're going to do best with what is available to us. But if you're really hankering for that Kentucky Derby experience, maybe wait till next year. They're going to run it again.
Six Flags. You know Six Flags theme parks, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
So what do you associate with Six Flags theme parks?
The dancing guy with the commercial from literally 15 years ago.
Mr. Six?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Venga Boys song?
Correct.
Okay, so what else do you associate
Six
Flags?
Venga Boys.
What else do you associate Six Flags with?
Rides.
Right, exactly. You talked about experiences that aren't going to be the same. So Six Flags in Vallejo, California is reopening next week.
Really?
Yes, with no rides.
Literally, how does that work?
They have animals there, apparently.
It's a petting zoo?
No, they have there's an aquarium or some sort of
exhibit. You're going to feed the ducks?
So essentially, you're going to go to Six Flags thinking, I'm going to go hop on the rides and take pictures and have unlimited Cokes with the refillable bottle of
Cokes. Come on.
Whatever. And then you're going to get there and like, oh, yeah, you can't ride anything. You're just here to see the animals.
Are they going to at least run the rides so they're, moving in the background with nobody on them? Or is it going to be creepy with complete, just utter standstill across the grounds? Because that's creepier.
I don't know.
This sounds like what Progressive Park is. Just putting it out there.
Right.
Sounds like it.
There you go, right.
Oh, that's bizarre.
Yeah.
We'll have to go.
Right.
I wonder
so
if
listen,
they have llamas.
I'm not sure if the new normal is the right normal, to be honest, but everybody's got to adapt at some point. There's your check down, powered by Radio.com Sports, your five biggest stories of the afternoon. Coming up next, we are talking about the hubs and awaiting the NHL's announcement for hub cities as the NHL gets ready to restart. We're going to head to one of those potential hubs coming up next. TSN 1260's Dave Jamieson joins us from Edmonton in just moments.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul Lindsay with you on a Thursday afternoon. We are awaiting any point now, any time now. Maybe it's tomorrow, maybe it's Saturday, maybe they'll just sneak it in a tweet. The NHL's announcement for hub cities as they get ready to restart and play out a relatively traditional Stanley Cup playoffs and remainder of the season with some round-robin twists. But where these teams will be playing still remains up in the air. There are still six cities in the running for it. We are one of them here in Las Vegas. And one of the front runners that's been very vocal, and I've actually been fairly impressed about how vocal they've been, is Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And joining us this afternoon to talk about that bid and what his thoughts are about their chances for landing the hub is TSN 1260 Midday host Dave Jamieson. Dave, thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you.
Dave, as we start narrowing down and we've seen, American cities fall off, and there's still three Canadian cities involved in the hub process and three here in the United States. Las Vegas has been pointed at kind of one of the front runners. But what I've been impressed with, and I'll be honest with you, I wish we had more local support like this, and you have provincial support about the Edmonton bid.
Yeah, it's, we've been unabashedly, and I say we, the province of Alberta, our Premier Jason Kenney, and anybody else with a voice in all of this, and I think there's been a decent level of support at the civic level as well, is Edmonton has checks a lot of boxes. It has a beautiful new arena, which has not only the main ice surface, but an NHL-sized ice surface immediately adjacent, so you can work the practices and get that part of the scheduling handled. But also, we've got, more importantly, through all of this, is we've got a really good story about COVID-19 to tell. And I realize that, you know, context is needed in terms of numbers and that sort of thing. But this part of the province, it was, and I'm talking about the northern part where Edmonton is located, was very aggressive early in testing. And I think that people have, you know, with some exceptions, have largely bought into the idea of physical distancing and wearing masks and doing all of the things that we're being told to do on a daily basis by the provincial health authorities. So, you know, on the one level, you've got the COVID-19 thing. I mean, there's always going to be flare-ups, and there's been one in the last couple of days at a local hospital. So, you know, these things, but largely managed, and they've increased the testing, and that's excellent as well. In Edmonton, we obviously don't have some of the charms and the size of Las Vegas in terms of the number of hotels and that, but a few years ago when the arena opened, there was an area called Ice District built, and it's akin to LA Live and some of the other developments you see around North America. So, you know, it's really compressed. It's and you can create, for lack of a better term, a bubble. There's a hotel directly attached to the arena. It's not a very big downtown, so you can kind of get your arms around it in terms of managing access to the arena and limiting access from the outside in terms of getting into that bubble. So, you know, there's a lot of things that look good for the Edmonton, I'll call it a bid, because that's kind of really what they're doing. And there's also one of the maybe slightly less intended benefits is this part of this province, really the whole province of Alberta, but especially in the northern part, has been, before COVID-19, was going through a very deep downturn in the oil and gas industry, of which we are very dependent here. So there was the economic problems that were stemming from that. Then you lay on COVID-19. And so Edmonton, northern Alberta, if not the province, if not the country, if you want to take it even further, could use a leg up, could use a boost. Now, you could say that all across the world at this point, but, you know, there are things that make Edmonton, I think, really appealing, attractive. But at the end of the day, you know, there's some other Canadian cities. Toronto carries a lot of weight, not only in this country, but also in the NHL.
Now, Dave, we're talking about the bubble that Edmonton has done such a good job marketing themselves to be able to provide for the players. But can you walk us through a little bit more of the details of what it's like to walk through Rogers Place and the things that they offer the players? Because it's one of those facilities that is consistently voted as one of the top places to play from the players in the league. And that includes, obviously, all the visiting players as well. So just what does it feel like to be in that space as a player?
Well, first of all, it's got, and which just seems strange because in sports, you know, they don't spend a lot of time in the visitor locker room, but apparently, and I haven't been in that one, but I've been in the home one, is that Edmonton didn't cut corners in terms of, you know, the construction of the arena. It's got all the modern conveniences that you would expect of arena that's been built, you know, within the last few years, but the ice surface is fantastic. We do a few things well in Edmonton. One of them is create ice, you know, and we have that created for us with the weather up here through, you know, a good chunk of the year. But the ice has historically been very good in Edmonton, and that matters. And that matters a lot when you're going to be playing a lot of games in a compressed time. In terms of the what I call back of house amenities and services in Edmonton and in that arena, mandate of the Cates Group, and they built the thing, is we're not going cheap. We're not going to treat it like, you know, something that feels unfinished. So, you know, whichever teams are coming here, if in fact they do come here, I think they can know comfortably that when they walk in there, it won't be their home, but it may feel like it because, you know, the support personnel, I mean, this is a city that does hockey really well. But in terms of the downtown and some of the things that, you know, Edmonton, small downtown, I mean, here I am talking to you guys in Vegas. I mean, I feel almost embarrassed trying to sell us against Vegas. You guys seem to do pretty well at the entertainment stuff. But the idea that you can come here, I mean, this is a work trip for these players and the coaches and the small staff that are so, you know, the idea that you're going to have a great downtown. Yeah, there's lots of great restaurants and so on and so forth, but you're not here for sightseeing. Now, what Alberta has done and the province is tried to sell Alberta. Edmonton is where the hockey's played, but if families are going to come, we've got lots of mountains, lots of natural charms that you can get to over and above just the hockey itself. The hockey's going to look after itself, and the hockey, all of that stuff will be just fine. It's, you know, frankly, one of the criticisms will be, you know, there's Vancouver, Toronto, and Edmonton. Edmonton, as lovely as it is, can't fight in the weight class of Toronto and Vancouver. I mean, I'm a former Vancouverite, 31 years, raised there. I know that city extremely well. It's beautiful, and Toronto is Toronto, so which is, you know, our New York. So, you know, Edmonton's the little city, the little province that could, but we've got a really good story on the health and safety front. So that might be ultimately the tipping point.
TSN 1260 Midday host Dave Jamieson joining us live from Edmonton, Canada, here on the Playmakers. Dave, your gut, what does it tell you? I mean, you just mentioned that, you know, Vancouver's got its charms. Toronto has the hockey history. Your gut, does it tell you that you guys will be one of the two hub cities, and, you know, we'll take one and you guys will take the other?
Well, I'm sure we'd love to work, you know, arm in arm with you guys. But listen, my gut tells me that, you know, Vancouver's had a snag in the last, you know, 24, 48 hours in terms of the provincial health authority. They've had some flare-ups there, and there may not be, the level of support for this concept that there was previously. The Ontario government, within the last half hour or so, has been reconfirmed by one of our TSN insiders covering the NHL that the Ontario government has, you know, very much signed off on the deal. Now, the provincial health authority here in Alberta has signed off on the Oiler Entertainment Group, which is the owner of the Oilers hockey team, has signed off on their bid package in terms of the health components of it. So, not having been able to look at the three respective packages, I don't know how this is going to play. My gut, and I hate to say it, is Toronto, because the NHL has an office there. Toronto is Toronto. It's, you know, the big city in our country. And, you know, people out here don't want to admit it, but, you know, a lot of things happen out of Toronto, and the head office of Rogers Sportsnet, who are the official, you know, partner in Canada of the NHL, is in Toronto. So all of that said, if Edmonton doesn't get it, they will have done everything humanly possible to do it. And, my gut says Toronto.
Dave, we've been talking a lot around hockey, but I want to switch gears a little bit and start talking about hockey, because the city selection is a huge deal, but I know you're just as excited as we are here for actual skates and sticks and pucks to get back on the ice. So let's talk about those Oilers a little bit, because deep down, I'm sure the Chicago Blackhawks organization didn't expect to be part of the playoffs after their seesaw of a season, but they're matched up with your Oilers in the qualifying round in that best of five series. Lots of deep playoff experience on that underdog Blackhawks squad. But if I'm standing in front of a whiteboard in a locker room with the players, with the Oilers players, what are three goals or areas of focus that I should give them to help dismantle the Blackhawks and take care of them quickly in that qualifying round?
I'm going to say two names, McDavid and Draisaitl.
Good start.
The Oilers, yeah, they start there, and then whoever can chip in outside of them, I mean, they're going to have to listen. McDavid being McDavid is good enough to win you a bunch of games just on its own. When you have Leon Draisaitl being what Leon Draisaitl has been for the last couple of years, okay, that takes you up another, you know, notch. What the question mark is going to be is, which of the goalies are they going to run with in the playoffs, or certainly in the opening round, and is Mike Smith or Mikko Koskinen good enough to get them where they need to be, you know, winning a best of five? And that will be, you know, during the course, both of them, during the course of the season, or as much as we got played, both of them were capable at times of being, you know, good if not great. That's where the Oilers' Achilles heel will be in terms of their playoff success. The other thing is, are you going to get contributions from the bottom six? It's a top-heavy team. It's a little better balanced after the deals they made for Athanasiou and Tyler Ennis. So they got a little deeper. They got a little faster. But again, it'll be, you know, can somebody other than McDavid and Draisaitl score? James Neal was injured, but now, you know, they'll get him back healthy. So, you know, hopefully he's got, you know, still some goals in that stick. and what they can pick up sort of on the periphery of their core. And again, when you've got McDavid, when you've got Draisaitl, I'm sorry, with all, you've got a leg up on most of the teams you're going to face.
Oh, Dave, I knew we were going to be best friends before we even interviewed, but that you went to the goaltending position first, and that is the position that I played all the way through my career. So I want to expand a little bit on that, because I agree with you. The goaltending position has been probably the position of most contention for the Oilers over the last few years. And it has been split between Koskinen and Smith pretty much 50-50 all season. So do you think that Coach Dave Tippett is going to lean towards rotating those goalies in that qualifying round, or pick someone and see how it goes? Because I'm sure there's a leash for each goalie that kind of is different based off of what you're seeing from him in the crease. But where do you think Coach Dave Tippett is going to be leaning?
He has been masterful in how he has managed the goalies this year and seems to know who to go to at the right time. Sure, there's going to be games where, you know, that doesn't play out. You play enough hockey, things aren't going to go, you know, how you want it to. But I think the with the two of them, my inclination would be Tippett has, you know, passed with Mike Smith. Mikko Koskinen, even though he is a starter, you know, maybe a 1A, 1B kind of arrangement right now in his career, is still relatively inexperienced. I mean, he had a cup of coffee with the Islanders, went, you know, away, comes back to the NHL. It's not like we're talking about Carey Price here. So, you know, he's got, I think he made some necessary improvements in his game in terms of, you know, the glove. He was sort of awkward in terms of his placement and kind of how he handled that, and that would be an area of deficiency, and it got better this year. But I think my gut would be Smith to start, and he can win you games, and Mike Smith can also kind of go sideways, you know, and people know that, and he's a proven NHL goaltender. He's been on the stage before, and that would be the way I think they would start. But Tippett, you know, he would seem to make the right move at the right time, didn't overplay somebody and didn't underplay in terms of, you know, getting somebody out if they won a game or two and then, you know, immediately flipping. He just seemed to have a real nice touch for that.
Now, I don't want to look past that first round because that's very antithetical to the hockey mindset, but what team scares you the most on the Western Conference side? Because there's a lot of talent and a lot of teams that got really healthy over the last couple months. Who do you think is most likely to come out of this side?
Well, how about the team in your town? There's a ton of talent right there. I think Vegas is a real team and doesn't have many deficiencies, at least from, you know, my vantage point. It's weird talking about, you know, playoffs and looking ahead because it's been so long since we've seen these teams. You got to kind of remind yourself, yeah, what were they like? You know, I mean, we can look at the records and figure out, you know, who's good and the Tampas and the Bostons and stuff like that. But, you know, when it comes down to the style of play, I think it's going to be really interesting. The team, well, obviously, the team that can quickly find itself in terms of, you know, chemistry and try and kind of hit reset and get back to where they were when they left off. But, you know, I would certainly look at Vegas on that side as a team that I, you know, oh God, having to face them would be not a fun day at the office.
Well, Dave, we had George Larocque on a couple of weeks ago, and you and him are in lockstep on Vegas. So just
yes, and I wouldn't want to anger George Larocque, so that's good.
There you go. You guys are right on the same page there.
Yeah, nobody's angry here either.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Midday host of TSN 1260 in Edmonton, Dave Jamieson here with the Playmakers. Follow him on Twitter, Jamieson 1260. Dave, thanks for hanging out with us, and when the playoffs get up and running, we'll be sure to check in again.
Love to do it. Thanks, guys.
All right. Dave Jamieson, TSN 1260, Edmonton. Got a good pulse on what's happening up there for sure.
Absolutely.
And, fingers crossed for them and fingers crossed for us here, obviously, in Las Vegas in terms of getting that hub nod. The NHL had promised some sort of word here by the end of this week.
Right.
In terms of what was going to happen. I mean, training camps are legitimately 2 weeks away from tomorrow in terms of the start.
Yeah. So we probably should announce that relatively soon.
Something we'll have to get rolling for sure. Coming up next, have you ever played golf with someone who might be just a little bit too chatty for you? We'll explore that.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
All right, so when the NHL makes its announcement, we'll make sure that we give you the skinny on that if it happens during the program here, for sure.
We'll shout it from the mountaintop.
That is the truth. Paul and Lindsay here with you on this Thursday afternoon. Golf is back on the course again today. Where are they playing today?
I don't know. It's the Travelers. That's all I know.
They're traveling somewhere.
I could ask Mother Google.
You could. It's the actual event of a golf that is moving forward. Lots of low scores today, by the way. So don't be surprised if you see some like minus 20s by the end of the weekend. But there's a thing, because without the crowds, players are having to focus a little bit more on their game, which is probably a good thing. But they're also having to focus a little bit more on who they're playing with besides their caddy and their playing partners. And Bubba Watson came out and said, not too crazy about sometimes in terms of a pairing. He says, whoever you might be paired with could essentially be a penalty for you.
Yeah.
Because he likes to be grouped with fun and energetic players.
Not game seven mindsets.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, the guys that are there just to golf.
Yeah. The real serious. And that's the thing, is that everybody has a different approach to performance, whether that's in sports or work or whatever else. But some people need to take things really seriously when they're in competition. Some people a little more lighthearted. And I've been in situations like that in golf,
sure,
in hockey.
I think many people have.
Right. And so it's totally relatable. And I'm sure it would be silly for us to say, well, it doesn't affect at the pro level, especially, as you said, there's a lot of silence around those courses than there usually isn't, right?
Yeah, there's enough people out there. It's funny, you know, like in baseball where a guy will get a walk to first base or get a single or whatever, and you can see if there's a rapport between them and the first baseman. They'll chat it up,
yeah,
or whatnot. But in some cases, they won't say a word to each other.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of way, Watson's kind of thinking that way, because he likes, and everybody's different. Some people play really well with chatty people,
mm-hmm,
the ones that will talk and have a good time.
Not
and,
taking themselves too seriously.
Right, maybe drop an expletive, and it's
or
just
17.
Right, and it's just okay. And I think as I get older, and I've been playing sports and played at a relatively competitive level in my youth, and definitely not now, it's all beer league at this point. But, you know, I enjoy the camaraderie on the course. I enjoy the chattiness. But I remember playing back in my high school days and playing varsity golf with, you know, and I was I was like a 3 and 4 guy. So, you know, I'd be with their 3 and 4 guys. And sometimes you get some randos that was kind of like they were just always joking around and being yucksters to the point where it was just incredibly annoying. And I'm like, no, dude, I don't have an extra tee for you. Haul your butt back to your own bag and get your own thing, because I'm not here to goof around with you, because I've pretty much had it for the first 4 holes of this, you know, match that we're trying to play.
Right. And especially like in high school golf, where you have like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And that's usually how many players are on the varsity, or at least that's what it was for me. And
yep,
I was always in the 1 and 2 pairing, at least
sure
when I was. Well, Paul,
I know.
Come on.
I know. Yes, I know. I know.
Well, at least in the latter half of my high school golf career. But in the earlier parts, when I was in those lower pairings, a lot more loosey-goosiness, a lot more informality, and yeah, sometimes you get annoyed, but I would much rather be annoyed by somebody being a little too chatty, which was usually me, than I was when you're playing with the ones and twos, where you get a lot more frequent of players where they're just like, I'm here to be focused, to be honed in, don't even look at me. If you swear in my presence, I will give you a 2-stroke penalty, and guess what? I'm going to take a minute to take every single practice swing before I view and posture this shot. That happened in the state tournament, Paul. And I swear to you, we added like 2 hours to our 4-hour round just because this girl had this entire routine that she had to go through to get ready for the shot. And it was a minute. I'm just like, can we get a ruling on this perhaps? But I'm more of a loosey-goosey person in golf, but in hockey, I was a zoned in, focused person.
Sure. It's just, it's strange how it works, especially at that professional level. And you see these types of guys, and you can imagine the players that he would want to play with and the people that he hangs with outside of the golf course too.
Yeah.
When
and
you
he's
could.
Self-taught, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's kind of always been on the outside looking in.
He gets it.
Mm-hmm.
I totally get that. But, you know, we've all played with those, you know, and especially when you end up with, you know, sometimes, you know, and I played solo golf before. It's tough. You know, we don't
it
have,
stinks.
You know, but you're out there and you're like, you're trying to wait for like 3 guys to come rolling up and you're the 4th guy and you don't know what's going to be like. I literally played around in silence once where
yeah,
these guys were just they were out there to play. And I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to, you know, hit the ball or whatever it is. Right. And I played some really great courses. And it was just an odd public course where they were just taking it so seriously. And I've played at Kapalua, mm-hmm. where I played with three people that just wanted to talk the entire time. Like, either we're on vacation, we're right. having a good time, and we're playing this course that, you know, Tiger has walked.
Right. No, it's really just a mixed bag, but especially when you're golfing by yourself. I don't know if you feel like this, because I've had this happen to me several times, is when you're alone, people are like, play through, because they don't want you to wait. It's a courteous thing to do on the course, but then you're always being put on the platform. We're all going to watch you tee off. And guess right, what? You have yep. that little kind of motor in the back of your head.
Don't
being,
it, don't
am I,
it,
am
don't
I taking too long in the green? Am I taking too? And so it's just, it's not enjoyable for me as much, but you know. Everybody approaches their performance in different ways, Paulito.
Truth. Well, sometimes golf can be a little chatty mm-hmm. for some. And yeah, it definitely affects performance. Coming up next, your daily pep talk.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
On this 182-degree day, Paul and Lindsay with you on a Thursday.
Completely accurate.
Yeah, it is. It's true. The clouds aren't helping. It's like this big blanket over the top of the valley.
Yeah.
Just trapping the heat.
Once it gets past a certain point of heat or coldness, doesn't really matter once you go past whatever that watermark is. It's just hot.
Yeah. Tony Cordasco is going to join the program here at 4 o'clock and continue the sports conversation. A couple of things to pass along to you. One, Liverpool has won its first ever Premier League football title. So Premier League.
Liverpool.
Yes, Liverpool. The lads have done it there. There is, apparently, according to NHL.com, there are now finalists for the Seattle nickname.
Oh, really?
They're working through it, but they didn't put a timestamp on when they're going to announce it.
Did they give us the finalists?
No, they did not.
Oh my God, come on.
Well, it's because they did the climate change arena in Seattle today.
Sure. I mean, I know that they moved their announcement in general just because there's a lot going on right now, which makes sense, but just give us a little taste.
Yeah, no taste.
Nothing.
Ain't nothing.
Nothing.
So, all right, time for a daily pep talk.
It is time for a daily pep talk, and it comes to us from the Tube of You, and a little bit of a mixed bag again today. A bunch of different speakers, Les Brown, Jim Rohn, Tony Robbins, all about proving them wrong. Let's run that tape, Marcus.
The most powerful motivational speeches that I have ever heard came from people who told me I couldn't do something. You know why? Because when they told me I couldn't do it, I was bound and determined to show them that I could. Tell me I can't do it. I will prove you wrong. I will show you.
We're not made to survive. We're not made to manage our pain or get through it. We're made to be creators of our lives. We can create anything. Anything we can dream about, we can create. How much of life do you feel like you control, or how much does life control you? Do you tend to control more of what's going on, or events controlling you? It's very easy to have those events start to take control unless we take control of what's between our ears, our own mind. You see, what you and I focus on massively affects how we feel, whether we're thriving or surviving. If you focus on what you can't control, if you focus on the past, if you focus on what's missing from your life constantly, that pattern of focus will make you frustrated, overwhelmed, depressed. Focus equals power. If you want to thrive, you got to focus on what you can control. You got to focus on the difference you can make. You got to focus on what's already in your life that you're grateful for.
Most people allow their fear of failure, 80% allow their fear of failure to outweigh their desire to succeed. When you're willing to fail again and again and again, when you make up your mind to become unstoppable, when you make up your mind to become a no matter what person, then that will then give birth to a part of yourself that you don't know right now.
Set some higher goals. Reach for some higher purpose. Go for something beyond what you thought you could do. You've got to believe that tomorrow can be better than today. But here's the big one. Believe in yourself. Believe in yourself. Ask for wisdom to deal with the challenges of today and tomorrow. Don't wish it was easier. Wish you were better. Wish you were better.
conversation, right?
Intensity.
It's still, some of these are a little bit more about the music that we've chosen.
Yeah.
You know,
makes or breaks it.
Right, clearly.
Yeah, it's like a 2-minute outro.
Right. We just keep it going.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of... I don't know. Now it's getting...
Oh, there's a drop. Wait. Oh, let's go. Let's go, Paulito. I see you punching air. I see you moving. Put your pants on.
I feel like I just pulled into the garage at Cosmo.
Woo! I'm here for this song.
Go head up to Hattie B's and get some hot chicken.
Right.
Go over to Egg Slut.
Yeah. A little bit too much of a fancy breakfast there for me.
Like, yeah.
Can I just get some toast and some bacon separately?
So you just want to go to Peppermill then?
Yes. I have yet to go to the legendary Peppermill.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't.
Yeah, you
yet.
Need to go down there. It's a good time.
I've heard.
It's a good time. Very legendary Las Vegas meal.
Yeah.
You could sit in the same booth that Clark Griswold and his family sat in.
Are you serious, Clark?
Yeah, the Vegas vacation was... probably not needed in that series of vacation movies, to be honest.
I don't think I've seen it, so I'll
really?
Take it. No, I don't think I've seen the Vegas one, no.
No, Wayne Newton's in it. Mr. Las Vegas himself.
Mm-hmm.
He courts Clark's wife.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, Christmas Vacation.
Nick Papa Giorgio? Oh, you wouldn't even get that reference.
Nope,
now you have
it.
To. Now you need to go watch it.
I know. We'll just add it to the list of other 10,000 movies that you lambast me for.
Yeah, but Vegas Vacation still, like...
I know. It's Vegas-related, so I should see it.
Yes. The Nick Papa Giorgio you'll get right away.
Source material.
Yeah, it'll help. Mm. It'll help just a little bit.
Okay. I'll get right on that. Right on it!
Yeah, all right. That's hour number one. Hour two on the way. Tony Cordasco is going to join and talk a little bit, continue the sports conversation as they stick to sports here. Going to talk a little bit about old athletes, too, and Hockey Hall of Famers. It's coming up next on The Playmakers.
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
Thursday, June 25th of the year 2020, second hour of the Playmakers kicking off here as we speak. My name is Lindsey Brown, and joining me as he does each and every day for the 4 o'clock hour is Mr. Las Vegas, the mayor, the owner of God knows how many burner accounts, Uncle Tony Cordasco. Dasco, what's up, my dude?
Hey, how's it going, Lindsey? Today was supposed to be tonight, the NBA draft, right? And, you know, I was just thinking, though, so Vince Carter, we'll talk about him later this hour, but his PR people, the NBA, you have to wonder, right, if they planned out this day when there was not a ton of sports news happening, no major sports news this morning. I wonder how they planned it out so that he really did get his shine today, is what I was getting at. So that's pretty cool and well-deserved after 22 seasons, and he played in 4 decades.
Yeah, it's insane, his career and what the world was like the last time the NBA existed without Vince Carter. But as you said, we're going to get into that a little bit later on in our show. But we got to start things off with a good beat here, Dasco. And that's why we always start things off with Don't At Me with Uncle Dasco, where you get to read one of your tweets that you've already put out to the Ethernet to promote your great insight and just wisdom. So what selection do you have for us today, my dude?
Remember all those vines of people dancing to At Night I Think of You? Random, I know. So that was the tweet. Were you big on the Vine app?
Well, the Vine app kind of started to come to fruition when I was in college. So I was definitely in the Vine when it was a big thing. It has since been, I guess, disbanded for the last couple of years. But I wasn't like a crazy user, but clearly you were.
Yeah, it was pre-TikTok, right? And so did they have an actual dance for that song? This is the stuff that I think of at like 2 and 3 in the morning and I just tweet it out. But was it part of like the Running Man challenge or...
Perhaps there's so many challenges that have come up through the years and but I'm not sure, Dasco, but I'm sure we could find it because I know there's an archive there somewhere on the internet. But
on Vine,
yeah,
you still have it downloaded too. Is it still
maybe? I think it was just. I think they just switched it to a camera because it's a Twitter property. But nonetheless, Vine, RIP, miss you. 7 seconds.
And then the group was MNEK or Manek or I don't even. They were one hit wonders, obviously, but I never. Remember, I had to look it up today. Because it's like, and now that stupid song, as you know, when you start to talk about a song,
right,
gets stuck in your head. So
we should create a Dasco challenge. There has to be something. We have to come up with this. The greatest of all the minds here
bad
in Las
tweets.
Vegas. There you go. And we'll come up with a dance for it or something. We'll put it on the TikTok. And it'll be like RIP for Vine. It'll be good stuff, Dasco. So we're just coming up with great ideas left and right. Good stuff today, Dasco. That wraps up our Don't At Me with Uncle Dasco portion of our segment here. And we're going to move on to Stick to Sports. That's what we're usually told to do. But guess what? Current events and sports exist in the same reality. And so we have to discuss things that exist in this reality here, Dasco. And we're going to lead off with an update on the story of the situation that's been surrounding NASCAR for the last week and the noose situation. There was a picture of the actual noose finally released and tweeted out by NASCAR today. We hadn't seen that yet, but in case you've been living under a rock or haven't really been paying attention to the sports news, on Sunday night when the race was postponed, it came out and NASCAR basically said, "We found a noose in the garage of Bubba Wallace. Bubba Wallace is the only black driver in the NASCAR series." They launched an investigation. They got the FBI involved. A couple days later, the FBI said this is not a hate crime. The noose had been there since this previous fall in October of 2019. And once that news came out a couple days ago, Dasco, obviously considering the climate that we're in, a lot of people have had things to say about this situation. A lot of people call it a hoax. A lot of people said they faked it. But with this picture that was released today, There is no question exactly what that rope is. It is not just something to pull down in the garage, or at least it is not just fashioned as a more effective way to use the rope. It is a noose.
Yeah, and it was not a hoax, and it does look like the rope is in the formation of a noose.
Mm-hmm.
No denying. And Bob Pockrass, who was on Saturday Sports Beat, a couple Saturdays ago, he has a photo and a video on his social media, and it shows the noose was there when he took a photo randomly of it last fall, October 14th,
really?
Of 2019. And it's the same rope. It's the same rope, that's for sure. It's
mm-hmm.
supposed to be a pull-down rope,
yep.
But none of the other garages have a pull-down rope
yeah.
that looks like a noose.
And that's not just, let's make one knot to make it easier to pull down. That is a full-blown, that's what you would see as a prop. That's what you would see in wherever. There's no ifs, ands, or buts that this is a noose. And that whether the investigation said it was not directed towards Bubba Wallace, and they're not really going to be able to figure out who it was directed, who did it, because as we said, it happened in the fall. But nonetheless, the presence of that, first of all, shouldn't be welcomed anywhere, but especially any place that has something to do with NASCAR or anything. And that's why they went to the great lengths that they did in the investigation. And NASCAR President Steve Phelps talked about this yesterday on ESPN's First Take, at least just kind of walking or trying to explain what was going through their heads, because a lot of people were saying, well, why did you react the way that you did if it wasn't directed at Bubba Wallace? And he said, given the facts presented to us, we would have pursued this with the same sense of urgency and purpose. Upon learning of seeing the noose, our initial reaction was to protect our driver. We're living in a highly charged and emotional time. What we saw was a symbol of hate and was only present in one area of the garage, that of the number 43 car of Bubba Wallace. In hindsight, I should have, again, this is coming directly from Steve Phelps, president of NASCAR, I should have used the word alleged in our statement. As you can see from the photo, the noose was real, as was our concern for Bubba. With similar emotion, others across our industry and our media stood up to defend the NASCAR family, our NASCAR family, because they are part of our NASCAR family too, and we are proud to stand up to see so many to stand up for what's right. And I think that's it. You can kind of go after them. I don't agree anybody that's like, well, that was an overreaction, they went too far, considering what we're dealing with and the conversations we're having. I think this completely makes sense in my mind, and I hope that the investigation was thorough and that everybody's good to go. But I agree with Steve Phelps, don't you?
Absolutely. And you know, I would have utilized the word alleged, and you and I both know this, because I think as we continue with our sports careers,
mm-hmm.
we've become part-time doctors and attorneys.
Yes.
Phelps said the organization did a sweep of 29 tracks where they raced, 29 of them,
mm-hmm.
and 1,684 garage stalls, and they found a total of 11 pull-down ropes and only one tied like a noose.
Yep.
Only one. You know, and you still have to be unsure how Bubba Wallace wound up in that particular stall.
Right.
Garage
the coincidence
four,
is crazy.
Well, it was their intent to mm-hmm. put him in that stall.
Mm-hmm.
Who made the assignment? Those are the questions, the only questions that I have remaining.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's going to be still a lot of information, a lot of people seeking out answers, and that's the thing. I don't know if we're ever going to get a full, clean bill of why he was placed there, if there is any sort of insidiousness behind it, or I don't know, why anybody fashioned a noose there at last fall in general. I don't get that at all, but all I know is that is a symbol that it was meant to make someone feel like they're not welcome, that they're not liked, that to make them feel uncomfortable, and that is no place in anybody's place of work, but especially in the world of sports, and it's just, it's not right.
Yeah, they're going to have to, you know, close the book on this. And they had the 15 FBI agents who concluded that there was no federal crime. It was not a hate crime.
Right.
At least I don't believe, or I mean, finding with their conclusion mm-hmm. that there was not a intentional, someone unintentionally did not put a noose in there because they knew that there was no criminal intent and that no one knew that, you know, it was going to be Wallace's garage.
Right.
And then therefore they put a noose in there. So
right.
they said no federal crime was committed earlier
against Wallace.
The FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Against Wallace.
Yeah. And as we said, Daskal, this is still a developing situation. It's been a crazy few weeks, and it continues a larger conversation that we're having as a society when it comes to social justice, when it comes to racism, when it comes to police brutality. And we're going to actually stay in the same realm, Daskal, but Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach, who are both football coaches. Lane Kiffin is down at Ole Miss and Mike Leach at Mississippi State. But they were down at legislature in Mississippi this morning and lobbying for the Confederate emblem to be removed from the Mississippi flag. That went on to say, we removed the flag from our campus 5 years ago, so we made it clear that it doesn't represent who we are at Ole Miss today. But today is another big step in doing our part to move the state forward and ensure a more welcoming environment for everyone. This is extremely important to me and our players and time to change. That's coming directly from Lane Kiffin, who was just hired by Ole Miss in December, but has been very vocal about his full support behind the wishes of his players to have a statue that salutes a Confederate soldier moved from its spot at the Ole Miss campus. But obviously this is about the Mississippi State flag as it exists right now. And NASCAR, as we learned last week, they banned all Confederate flags at their events. And the SEC, the NCAA have basically taken that step as well. And with the Mississippi flag is what it is. That's not going to fly. That's not going to work. So I'm glad that Kiffin and Leach are both there, and they were part of a group of 46 coaches and administrators from 8 public universities in Mississippi to address the legislature on Thursday. But it's just more news and more progress and people trying to make things right in the ways that they can.
Yeah, Lane Kiffin, you know, they said that they removed the flag from Mississippi from the campus 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that they made it clear it does not represent who Ole Miss is. And it's time now for change. And he supported his players to have that statue saluting Confederate soldiers moved there on campus. And I mean, right now they are being watched. The state of Mississippi is under a microscope because of the Confederate ties and all of that. And as you were just saying, like the SEC and the NCAA, right now, no postseason events to be played in the state until the state flag is changed. So it's time for change in Mississippi. And, you know, it was great to see them, you know, bitter rivals. And then there's what, 8, did you say, public universities in the state?
Yes.
That were represented. What a sign of solidarity again and strength. And it's like, we're not going to stand for it. This is the new way that we're showing progress. And it's really good. I mean, there's a lot of really positive changes in the world that are happening right now. And you just want to see it stay on course. And
right.
there is all sorts of momentum now.
It's not everything. It doesn't solve a lot of the problems, but it is something that needs to be taken care of. It is something that shouldn't be around right now, but it is. And so somebody has to step up and make sure that they're fighting for each little battle. And I'm glad that Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach and as you said, 8 other public universities involved in that contingency of 46 coaches and administrators, including the men's and women's basketball coaches that came down and said, hey, we're going to talk to the people directly, the people who make these laws, the ones that decide these things, and to make sure that we are showing that we're on board and supporting our players and our institutions in the new way and the right way to create an inclusive environment for everyone.
Yeah, if you want to make changes, now is absolutely the time to make changes in a positive direction. And earlier this month, Kylan Hill, Mississippi State running back, and the athletes now, student athletes are starting to get involved, which is terrific, too. Mm-hmm. And Hill said he wouldn't be representing the state anymore until the flag was changed. And so the athletes are making a stand, you know, the students, the coaches, administration. And with all those folks fighting in that direction, all going in the same direction, you're going to see positive change. And now is the time. If something out there, you know, you think isn't right, mm-hmm. Something that slights you, something that you feel is discriminatory in nature, or whatever. It's a part of the Confederacy in this case. Now is the time to make a change, a positive change. Yeah. Now, right?
Yep. Change and to speak up, Dasko. You're absolutely right. And that's the thing. That's why we lead off our second hour with the Stick to Sports portion of our show here, because it all happens in the same world. So we all have to talk about it. And when you have college coaches, student athletes, and a lot of people letting their voices be known, letting their opinions be known on something that is clearly wrong, clearly outdated and archaic, it's you have to talk about it, because this is what our new normal is, Dasko. And Dasko, we're going to switch gears a little bit on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about the Hockey Hall of Famers that were inducted yesterday, as well as the players on the rosters that are still playing today, and who we think each team has a best chance to make that enshrined Hall of Fame. We'll get into that next right here on the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
4:20 p.m. on this Thursday. Lindsey Brown and Tony Cordasco hanging with you guys. We're the Playmakers. We're here each and every day, at least the weekdays, 3 to 5 p.m. And Dasko, we're going to talk some hockey. We're in a hockey mood today. I guess I'm always in a hockey mood. I know that is not necessarily...
It feels like hockey season outside, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. What is it, about $1.20 outside? So it's definitely right. Feeling a little bit like an ice arena outside. But yesterday, the class of 2020 was announced for the Hockey Hall of Fame, the inductees. Those included Jerome McGinley, Marian Hossa, Kevin Lowe, Doug Wilson, Kim St. Pierre, and Ken Holland, Dasko. And Greg Wyshynski is a great hockey writer that's featured on ESPN, and he put together an article here where he wanted to talk about future Hall of Famers for all 31 NHL teams. So it's their active players that are still on the roster, as well as some alumni here, too. So he basically picked these players with these four criteria in mind: individual production, on-ice impact, prestige, and cultural impact. So, as I said, we're talking about the Hockey Hall of Fame and who some members associated with some teams would be the most likely to make the Hall of Fame next. And usually we like to go to our Golden Knights last, but we're going to start things off with them first here. And Dasko, who do you think is the most likely candidate that comes to mind the second I say Hall of Fame, Vegas Golden Knights, go?
Mark A.F.
I don't think that anybody else could really say any other name at this point. I mean, it's just...
Well, I didn't say a name, but you knew who I was talking about.
You said the letters. Exactly. And that's exactly who Greg selected for the top candidate for your Vegas Golden Knights in terms of the likelihood of making it into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Marc-Andre Fleury, the Flower, has 466 wins, which puts him fifth all-time in the NHL. He has a .913 save percentage and 2.57 GAA over his career, which aren't exactly like the elite of the elite, but you know what? Those three Stanley Cup rings, those definitely help make those numbers seem just a little more shiny. And then obviously with his impact here as a member of the Golden Knights is cannot be understated, cannot be fully articulated. But Greg also put up for debate Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone. Max Pacioretty, I think, is going to, he would, if he has a season like he had this year, and if they're able to obviously take that production and carry that over to the playoffs once things get going here, if he can have that every year for next 3 or 4, I think you could actually make a case for Max Pacioretty, absolutely. But I think other than Marc-Andre Fleury, Mark Stone, he's about as much of a lock, I think, but he just has to get some more years and some more reps under his belt.
Okay, so I'll go in order, right? So Marc-Andre Fleury. So the pause in the league has to help him, right? Because he's getting older. He had a difficult season on and off the ice and was wearing down. You know, last we checked and they were platooning him and Leonard. And we were always going to remember the first season when he played lights out here for the Vegas Golden Knights. He's going to be 36 years old in November. And I believe personally that if Vegas wins the cup this season, he retires so that he can stay at home and assemble IKEA projects.
Whoa. You think if they win the cup this year that he's going to retire?
I do. I really do. I feel like he would.
Are you drinking over there? Are you being crazy?
That would be four Stanley Cup rings, right?
Uh-huh.
Four Stanley Cups. And what else is there really, truly left to do?
Well, keep playing hockey, and that's what.
So how old? I mean, how far do you think he could go?
Well,
he's going to be 36.
He's one of those happy-go-lucky guys that you can definitely tell that he gets a lot of his happiness, a lot of his energy from being at the rink. He's a true rink rat goalie, and that's why that's how you get to where you are in a lot of ways. But as much as a Stanley Cup would be a great way to cap off a resume, I just don't see him retiring until he absolutely has to, or until the contract expires, and if the Golden Knights choose not to bring him on for an extension. But he's absolutely getting up there in terms of years, and it could help a little bit with the break. But I think with goalies, at least the way I view this personally, and being a goaltender myself, the break is great, but it's all about getting your timing back, and not having the ability to get on the ice as often is a really big thing for goalies. Sometimes it takes them a little bit longer, but Marc-Andre Fleury's been skating with those small groups of the Golden Knights through phase two for the last couple weeks, so I think that's going to be a much smaller learning curve, or at least a restart curve for Marc-Andre Fleury. But yeah, I think he's a Hall of Famer right now. If he retired today, I think he gets in. You know, another cup would definitely solidify that, and obviously
he's gonna come back as fresh as a daisy, which is a flower.
Look at you, Nasco. Look at you.
So Max Pacioretty, I wanted to talk about him. Mm-hmm. So he's the MVP of this team this season, right? I mean, do you agree?
Production-wise,
well?
Absolutely.
Yeah, 32 goals and all that.
Yeah.
But, okay, so here's the thing with Pacioretty. 280, again, career goals, but he does it. He doesn't do it. He doesn't make a lot of noise.
Well, what does noise look like to you?
So maybe he's not doing, he doesn't have the best celebrations. I don't know his numbers. He's so consistent. And you know, one of the things that they talked about was, in the criteria that Greg Wyshynski put out was, you know, and you played hockey. What would you emulate from his game?
Pacioretty's?
Yeah.
For him, it's the consistency, and that's the thing, and the way the lack of celebration, the kind of hard-nosed blue-collar mentality for Max. We have to remember that he was originally drafted and spent the majority of his career with the Montreal Canadiens, of which he was a captain. And as much as we are a hockey crazy city here, it is a much different culture up in Montreal when you have 8 or 10 different hockey writers that just write about the team. And so I think that's he's a much more tempered down personality, but for him, it's just he's the type of guy that shows up to the rink and he's the first one out there. He's always working on the same type of power play shot with the coaches before the Golden Knights were practicing, at least when we were still allowed to go to the rink and before everything happened. But he's just one of those guys that you'd say, I want to emulate the way that you approach the game. At least that's how I read it.
No, he's a professional. He's an absolute pro in everything that he does. And I really like him. And I just don't know that he's loud enough. Now, being loud could be scoring game winner, you know.
But I'd rather him be loud and score goals than him score 10 goals and have a really good celly.
So 32 in November, how much longer does he go?
Well, he's got a few more years on that contract, and he's only 31, Dasco, so he's not that old.
Right. So what, 4 years?
Yeah, 4 or 5, depending, okay. depending on injuries and whatever else. And but still, I think he definitely has a shot, but it would take a couple more seasons like the one that he had with your Golden Knights.
He needs a defining moment. That's what I was trying to get at. He does. He needs a defining moment.
Yeah, Yeah, and that would be winning a cup this year would absolutely provide him with that moment, and that would be probably just enough to propel him into that consideration. But Daskal, let's get a little bit outside of the Golden Knights here, and let's move around the league just a little bit. Let's go to the Chicago Blackhawks. We talked a little bit about them with Dave Jamieson earlier in the show. As we said, Marian Hossa was already elected as part of that class of 2020, but that team still has a few names that have three Stanley Cups to their resume as well, and that's why the top candidates that Greg provided here include Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith, mm-hmm. and Jonathan Toews. All of them are first ballot. All of them are in with a bullet. It's 100%. I'm on board for all three of those guys, especially Patrick Kane.
Well, yeah, of course. Definitely Kane. Yeah, I would have to agree with you. And then I was looking up for debate. So, you know, off the ice, and Jeremy Roenick got in a little bit of trouble, right, recently?
Yep.
And so how much would that hurt his chances, you know, of making it into the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, well, you could say that same thing about Patrick Kane as well, but we're just going off of stats and off the games themselves. But yeah, JR is definitely up there in terms of the consciousness, and he's obviously played for a few more teams other than the Chicago Blackhawks, but it's the Blackhawks that most of us associate him with. And I'm actually surprised that he's not in there yet, but maybe it's just because of his presence through the media maybe has allowed him to get a little bit more clout than maybe his career deserved. But I don't think Greg Wyshynski includes him on this list for the Chicago Blackhawks of up for debate for potential Hall of Fame enshrinement. But he also included Doug Wilson, a defenseman on that team as well. But it's tough to argue when you have Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith, and Jonathan Toews as the other one. I mean, it's been an embarrassment of riches for them as an organization. But you know, they're the underdogs this year. They're gonna be facing off against the Edmonton Oilers, Dasko, in the qualifying round in just a couple weeks. And I don't think it's too far of a stretch to say that the Edmonton Oilers for a future Hall of Fame candidate right now is probably Connor McDavid, perhaps.
Yeah, he's special. He's just a very, very special player. I wanted to ask you about one, and I think he's one of your favorite players in the NHL. Jonathan Quick.
Oh, I knew it, Dasko. You're going to take me down to the LA Kings place, and that's fine. What's your question?
Up for debate.
Jonathan no, it's Quick. Not. Well, it is and it's not.
He did have a good run. He did.
Yes.
The run is over.
Oh, and yes. And the thing is about Jonathan Quick, Dasko, is that he's a great goalie. And he's one of the most clutch goalies. I mean, he won the Conn Smythe when they won that first cup in 2012. They obviously have another cup to add to that as well. But he isn't exactly the most consistent guy during the regular season. It's not that he doesn't have bad numbers, but he doesn't have gaudy numbers. And then obviously after the couple of cups that the Kings were able to secure, injuries have caught up with him. He's a very athletic goaltender, very aggressive goaltender. You can definitely tell that weighs on his hips and his knees, just like it does for all of us who played between the pipes. But I don't know. For me personally, because I love him and I've always kind of emulated my game to his, I think he should get in. But when you're putting him up against Marc-Andre Fleury, as we discussed earlier, I don't.
What does he have to do, you know, to have like a closing kick, if you will? Because he's 34 now.
Yeah.
So again, like three maybe. Years, good years.
Maybe, maybe. And that's if the Kings let him still be the starter.
Close it out with a flourish, right? I mean, he has to do something special, you know, for the rest of his career.
Yeah, if he had a similar run to what he had in 2012, but did it in his mid to late 30s, that would definitely make a case for him. But I just don't think the overall body of work in the regular seasons and stuff. But who am I to say, Dasko? That's just me. But I would vote
for
him.
Debate. That's
it's
why
up
it's
for
up
debate.
For debate.
And then the other two candidates on the Kings that Greg Wyshynski said that aren't up for the debate, and I have a hard time disagreeing with him in terms of players on that Kings roster that should be Hall of Famers in the future. Drew Doughty and Anze Kopitar, both of them, 100%, 100%.
Did you see my Rangers? So they have, it's a done deal that the King.
Well, obviously, Henrik Lundqvist.
But they also, I call him Henry. Hank.
I know, I love him.
And they also have, you know, Mike Richter, who's still around. I mean, he won the Cup in 94. And he had a great run, but I don't know, Hall of Fame worthy, still question mark there. And then the star of the future, you know, one of my favorite players in the league by far, Artemi Panarin, who averages more than 1 point per game.
He's definitely started off his career very well. He'd have to continue, you know, at this pace. If you can average in the NHL over time, if you play like 10, 12, 15 seasons and you average over a point a game and you do something special, you win some awards,
right,
you maybe win a cup or two, then you should be in, right?
Right. Well, I mean, he's already got a head start on the awards. He won the Calder Trophy over Connor McDavid a couple years ago, and he's
which is crazy, right? When you think about that.
Yeah, but McDavid, I remember he missed some time in that first season with injury, but he's as advertised. It's just whether or not he has the tools around him to make things work. But in terms of Panarin, you know, he's in consideration for that Hart Trophy this year, probably going neck and neck battle with Leon Draisaitl, one of Connor McDavid's teammates.
Yeah.
But, you know, as many as those points are and as prolific as his career has been thus far, Dasko, he's going to have to win a cup. And especially with him taking or choosing to go to New York via free agency this past summer, you know, that's a big bet on yourself. And he's had a great year. And that team is definitely finally kind of digging themselves out of a rebuild. But
they're just fun. They're fun to watch.
They are so fun.
Like, they're entertaining. And if they go in and they just play, you know, like they have nothing to lose, they could be successful in the playoffs here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one team that it won't get a chance to see if they're successful in the playoffs, and we'll just kick a dead shark while it's down, the San Jose Sharks. Have a few big time players on their roster. As I said, they're in a bit of a lull themselves, but they're top candidates according to Greg Wyshynski in terms of potential Hall of Famers in the future. Eric Karlsson, the defenseman, and Joe Thornton. Come on, Dasko. Oh my God,
Thornton, yes.
Thornton's going to get in there. Karlsson will probably get in there. I'm just going to let you know
right
now.
He's got a couple of Norris trophies.
Just a couple.
The best offensive defenseman, perhaps one of them in NHL history.
He's got to stay healthy, you know, though.
He's got to stay healthy. Yeah, that's it.
But
that's
I do not agree with Greg's inclusion of give him a few. They have the top candidates, the up for debate, and then the give them a few years. Brent Burns. Brent Burns is not a Hall of Fame defenseman, people. I get it. He can score goals. But remember, he started his career as a forward. And as much as that kind of defensive core from the San Jose Sharks has changed the league over the last couple of years, Dasko, the defensive hiccups are just too big to overlook, at least for me.
Well, you liked him when he played forward in Minnesota.
Kind of. It's been a very long time.
He can't go in as a defenseman. No.
Let's just say he wasn't growing. He was babyface. There was no beard. It was a very different time and a very different place.
He shaved it off. Shaved it off during quarantine? No?
Oh,
didn't he?
I don't know. I don't keep up with what Brent Burns is doing. I'm not sure anybody in this valley really does. But, yeah, the San Jose Sharks have a couple of Hall of Famers on their roster for sure. Heck, I'd even put Logan Couture up there for somebody potential. Give him a few years just to see how his leadership kind of pans out. Or even Joe Pavelski, who has since departed for the Dallas Stars, he probably could be considered as well. But those all magical championships are really the deciding factor, as it is for most sports leagues.
Yeah, and then, you know, you're talking about, we've mostly talked about players, but, you know, when you look at coaches, the one name at the top of my list was Barry Trotz, now with the Islanders, and of course he's had, you know, pretty good career. I mean, he's already got 845 wins.
Yes.
And he's only four behind Ken Hitchcock currently for third all time.
And a couple of cups, at least one with the Washington Capitals. And absolutely, I think Barry deserves to get in there. But if he's going in, so does Joel Quenneville, who finds himself behind the bench in Florida, but won and led the Blackhawks to those three cups in the last 10 to 15 years. There's a lot of deserving players. As I said, this article can be found on ESPN. It's by Greg Wyshynski, the future Hall of Famers for all 31 NHL teams. Plenty of stuff to chew on, getting really excited for hockey season to come back and all the sports to come back. But there is one person that will not ever put on their jersey again, and that's Vince Carter. We're going to get into his story at the end of his career and what the world was like the last time the NBA existed without Vince Carter as a participant. We'll get into that on the other side of the break. We are the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Well, Dasko, at least for the first minute or so of this segment that we're going to get into talking about Vince Carter and what the NBA was like the last time it existed without his participation. But we have some breaking news out of the NHL world, Dasko, and it's been a theme today because earlier we spoke with Dave Jamieson, who is based in Edmonton. Edmonton is in the running to be considered one of the hub cities for the NHL restart. There's going to be two selections, and we have eliminated one of the cities out of the final six, Dasko, and Vancouver, you can slash it right out. Vancouver will not be one of the host cities that is tweeted directly from the Vancouver Canucks Twitter account. It had come out in the last 24 to 48 hours that there was some provincial law hiccups, some hurdles that were coming up, and so it was kind of written on the wall in terms of Vancouver bowing out, but that leaves Las Vegas, Chicago, L.A., Edmonton, and Toronto. So final five, as we've said over the last couple weeks, there's a pretty good likelihood that it ends up here, that one of the cities is Vegas, but nothing is set in stone, at least until the NHL tweets out about it or releases that. But it's looking better and better by the minute, Dasky.
So do they just cut like one city a day now? Like such a suspense.
Maybe.
Suspense is killing me.
I know.
Edmonton has to be in.
Yeah, well, Edmonton has really put forth a hell of a bid and a really good concept.
The Olympic Village concept, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so Vancouver, as beautiful as it is, as amazing as it is the city, if I were to move to Canada, the city in which I would move to, that has been eliminated officially. So down to the final five cities. But as I was saying beforehand, we are going to be talking about Vince Carter for these final few minutes, Dasko, because he's officially done after 22 years in the NBA, and we kind of knew this. We've known this for a while because when he signed that one-year deal with the Atlanta Hawks last season, he said it was going to be his final year. And I remember because I think the Hawks were still playing the same time when everything stopped, when Rudy Gobert tested positive and all of a sudden all the sports stopped. There were still a couple of NBA games going on as all that was developing. And I remember the coach of the Hawks put Vince back in at the end of the game just to see if he can hit a shot and ride out the rest of the game because it was probably going to be his last one. Ends up hitting a shot and ends it in the best way possible. But he has said officially, I'm done after 22 years.
What a career. Yeah, that was against the Knicks. Thanks, man.
Oh, it's okay.
But, you know, today I was just like thinking back of like some of the highlights, obviously, as a rookie winning the NBA slam dunk contest.
Yes.
With he didn't have any gimmicks or anything. It was just him high flying, man. And who could ever forget Le Dunk de la Mort, the dunk of death, on Frederick Weiss of France back in 2000 in the Sydney Olympic Games. He dunks over
right.
Weiss, who's 7'2" tall.
Yeah.
7'2".
And that was his early
soared
career.
Up over his head. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And with
yeah,
the Raptors.
That was his rookie year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was his rookie year.
Yeah, and I mean he's played for a bunch of different teams, eight different teams to be specific, but that's what happens when you are the only player to appear in at least one game in four different decades. His rookie season took place in 1999, but he's spent most of his time with the Raptors and the Nets, but 16.7 points per game and I think an absolute first ballot Hall of Famer when he's eligible. But Dasko, I did some research into what the world was like the last time the NBA existed without Vince Carter in it. And so I have a few of these things, and we're going to run through it. So did you know that the last time that Vince Carter was not in the NBA, it was 1998, and Google was just founded? Google!
Wow.
Yeah, Larry
no
Page
kidding.
And Sergey Brin, two PhD Stanford students, just, you know, starting a little business and turns out to be one of the biggest businesses that's ever existed. The internet is a lot wrapped up in Google. Also, Titanic dominated the Oscars in 1998, Dasko. 11 Academy Awards. How many times did you see that movie in theaters?
Never.
What?
I've seen the movie, but not in a theater, no.
Oh, my God, Dasko, that was so much my child. I'm disappointed, but we'll have to watch that. Maybe it'll be a trade-off. We'll watch Titanic, and then I'll watch an episode of The Bachelor. Seems like a fair trade for between the both of us. Also, something that also happened in 1998, which is the last time the NBA existed without Vince Carter in the league. The Euro was agreed upon. I know it's not really a thing that much anymore, at least not what it was a few years ago, but the Europeans agreed on the common currency of the Euro. 15 European Union countries agreed on that same monetary value. Harrison Ford was the people's sexiest man alive at age 55, Dasko. Seinfeld ended in the year 1998. Can you believe that? That one, I think, really stuck out to me the most. Like, that
doesn't
Seinfeld.
Seem like it's that long ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, Seinfeld seems like it went off the air a really long time ago, but it just. that just shows you how long the career was, because that is 22 years ago.
You know what else happened in 1998? What? I will tell you. We went back to the Billboard charts, and at number three, with a bullet, Tua T's crush, Shania Twain, "You Are Still the One."
Oh,
my
God.
Full circle on this show.
We
do. Full circle.
We do. We are all over the place, as always. But yeah, Shania Twain was definitely up there. Furbies.
98 was the Bulls, right?
Yeah.
Their sixth championship.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely
correct. Their last dance.
You're absolutely correct.
I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No,
what were you saying?
Furbies. Do you remember the Furby toys?
I thought you said Fergie. Yeah, no. I remember Furbies.
Yeah, they were probably the creepiest toys of all time, but that was the year that they were released. 1.8 million Furbies were sold in 1998, the first year that they were offered, which was nuts. I had a couple of those. I remember one of them ended up with some singed fur. Don't ask me how it happened. It was really devastating. Also,
Arsonist.
Exactly. American Airlines was the first airline to offer electronic ticketing in 1998 in all 44 countries that it served. Talk about a real time capsule. But the first in electronic ticketing. Remember, we used to get the tickets when you went on the airplane, or you were allowed to go to the gate.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt. And in 1998, France won the World Cup in France.
Oh, that's
what I
right.
remember from that time.
That's right, Dasko. It's crazy. And obviously, Vince Carter, one of the greatest, one of the biggest names in the NBA basketball, at least when I was growing up, the first NBA player to play at least one game in four different decades, officially calling it career after 22 years at the age of 43. So congrats to Vince and all of his success and his next chapter. I'm sure it's going to be great. But Dasko, we do need to move on to the good vibes. Not that we don't have them right now, but we need to move on to some more for our cheers portion of our segment here, where we like to hoist our metaphorical drinks, the tall, the small, the litten, the bitten, to someone, something, somewhere that's good and bright. So who are you highlighting for positivity today, Dasky?
I will have to highlight Billy Flanagan, an entertainer at Disney World in Florida for 38 years. And due to the park being closed, Flanagan missed singing and dancing for people. So while he was out on a bicycle ride, he stopped over at one of his friend's house to give a socially distanced hello. And what started out as a quick hello morphed into a flanagram. So that is a song and a dance that he personalized for different people. So what he does now is he goes around and rings doorbells, and then he backs up. And he puts on a show, and then he rides away. And to date, Billy Flanagan has visited 265 people, and he has logged in over 3,000 miles on his bicycle since the pandemic began.
Wait, he's biking to all these places?
Yes.
Oh, my Lanta. That's a one-stop shop. You got transportation, you got the show, you're making people feel great.
We used to do that, but we'd ring the doorbell and run.
Oh, you were a ding-dong ditcher? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Oh, that's exactly right.
I can't even imagine the kind of pranks he used to pull back in the day, Dasko. Not anything we can really get into that much on the radio, because we don't know about the statute of limitations.
Yeah, this is true.
Back when they had doorbells? What do you mean? Everybody has cameras now. You're right. That is a lost art. An absolute lost art. But good stuff. Congrats to him. And just something so random and so simple. But as you said, Dasko, really bringing some positivity to a lot of people in his community. And I'm happy for it. And speaking of positivity, which we bring to you to wrap up our show here for our cheers segment, Sean Penn, Dasko, you're familiar with the two-time Oscar-winning actor Sean Penn.
I thought you were going to say the two-timer.
No, not the two-timer. Nope, the two-time Oscar winner. Very Hollywood A-lister, has been very philanthropic throughout his entire career. He started the group CORE, formerly JP Haitian Relief, when he went and took volunteers to rebuild Haiti after an earthquake that took place many years ago that claimed a quarter of a million lives. It's still there today with 150 people working in the local community. But Dasko, he is doing more because he is starting to help out with the COVID. Because it turns out in Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Fire Department had already set up a bunch of different testing sites for people to come in and get tested. But he was like, well, maybe the firefighters, they could go fight fires. Maybe we can help and take this over, alleviate some of the pressure on the government services that we all depend on here, and to start a little bit of program to help with the COVID-19 outbreak, especially in his community in California. They've already completed 530,000 tests, as I said, also freeing up firefighters to get back to their regular duties. After he learned that the testing stations were being manned by the firefighters in Los Angeles, Penn says CORE, the organization, as I said, that he had already formulated to help out with the Haitian relief, was able to leverage existing infrastructure to send in trained volunteers to practically take over the city's testing program. And there was about 25 firefighters operating those sites, and now the sites are manned by 25 to 70 CORE staff members. So something, as I said, someone with a great track record of philanthropy that has done a lot for a lot of people, stepping up even more so for us here at home, but specifically in his community in California. CORE is also providing free testing in the California cities of Bakersfield, Oakland, Napa, and has now expanded to Atlanta, Georgia, New York City, New Orleans, Detroit, Chicago, and the nation of the Navajo. So cheers to Sean Penn and all the great things that he's doing to help get tests out there, to get to let people know where they're standing, and to make sure that we're all doing our part here to combat this virus. Gosh, Dasko, we're on fire today.
I'm going to watch Labor of Love tonight.
Oh, I was going to say.
Winding down.
What's Labor of Love? Which one is that?
That's the one where Christy Katzman is, she has to pick out of a group of single men, not her husband, but the guy that's going to father, he's going to be the baby daddy.
Oh.
So just three weeks remaining. And shout out again to Mark Kennedy, Mark Lynn Kennedy, my good man, my friend,
yeah,
the producer of that show.
Well, good stuff, Dasko. My eyes will definitely be glued, but hopefully your ears will return with us tomorrow, 3 to 5 p.m. Thanks to you, Dasko. And until then, be well, be safe, and wear your damn masks. Bye.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.